This is the BAM School Podcast, where we talk about business, adventure, and mission with your host, Buddy Rathmel.
Welcome to the BAM School Podcast. I am excited today to have on as a guest, Alan Biggs. He is from Colorado Springs, a lover of tacos, currently going through a man year with his son, and he got engaged while skydiving, so we have to hear that story, and is going to be talking to us about sustainable leadership and priorities and how do we decide what to do and stay healthy as leaders. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation. And Alan, welcome to the podcast, and please start us off with something dumb that you have done, maybe in Colorado, maybe somewhere else. But obviously not dumb enough that you didn't make it. You're still here with us. So welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Hey, spoiler alert. I'm still alive. Honestly, I have so many dumb stories. We could do a whole like podcast series. We better not on that. But one of them is when I was growing up, I lived in Virginia near the Appalachian Mountains, and I would go for long periods of time. You know, a couple days on backpacking trips, and somehow my parents let me do this. And I remember this one time, it was so hot, we decided to go anyway, and we brought like no water. And I remember we ended up having to be like on Skyline Drive, and we were begging people to give us water, and that wasn't working. Like no turns, they're like pulling aside, and they have these huge coolers, and they're like, you know, pulling out a cold beer, or they're pulling out drinks over here. They have Gatorades. None of us would give us that. And so we literally had to fake that we were having some exhaustion and we were like about to die so that people would actually give us water. And we're like, this is a low point in my life, I think, right now. And so I have some other stories, but that is one of those where we're like, we are the worst fakers out there, but we were able to get some cold water given to us so we didn't die.
Nice way to be creative and get the water you needed. Where did you grow up in Virginia?
I grew up in Charlottesville, so university town there right next to Shenandoah National Park.
Yeah, I'm in Roanoke, Virginia as we speak, so know the area well. Tell us about getting engaged while skydiving. Hit us up with that story.
So I kind of had to trick my wife into the day of our engagement, perhaps even into the engagement. I'll let you fill in the details there. But we had just an amazing dating relationship, and she had big dreams of really how she was going to serve the under-resourced, and now currently actually serves in foster care. She leads a foster care agency, and I had, you know, big dreams of how I was going to create new things and be entrepreneurial and do ministry across the world. And so really I thought we need to realize we're heading into this adventure together. And so I actually tricked her into taking a day off work and skydiving. I had the whole thing planned. I had a massive thing that was rolled across this field, and we were supposed to go for a picnic in a river town. We were driving past and said, oh, hey, let's go skydiving. Little did she know I had everything set up, including an engagement party afterwards. And so if she said no to not going skydiving and not marrying me, then I would have had, I don't know, 80 people showing up at my house that night and spending money on a party that would have been super sad. So that's the story, man. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. Well, thankfully she said yes. And here you are years later. Well,
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to talk about some healthy leadership. I know you have a book, you know, that just launched, and I'd love to ask you, what are some of the things that you see that cause burnout in leaders, or just in burnout in people in general?
Yeah. So there are little things that I could say, it's this, it's this, it's this, but I actually want to take four big topics. And the first is, what is our view of work? Secondly, what is our view of rest? Then what is our view of meaning and where meaning comes from? And then ultimately, the last piece is identity. So first of all, work. What do we believe that work is for? And so for me, I am a follower of Jesus, and I believe that we are actually created for meaningful work. But if we believe that all work is bad, that we're just going to try to minimize it, get out of it, sort of like a kid who's like trying to get out of schoolwork all the time and trying to get out of homework, and it's just like, oh, it's bad and I hate it, and let me just get through with this. But that work is actually meaningful, and that's really important. So if we have lies about that, it's going to throw our work off. Secondly, rest. If we believe that rest is good And I believe that it's given to me actually by God. It's actually a necessary piece of being a healthy human, and it inspires new things and makes me creative, and I can be connected to other people when I have it. Then that's the rest piece. The third is meaning. If I believe that meaning is going to come from just more work and doing more things and having more on my schedule in this culture of excess, instead of less in many ways, and turning that upside down, then of course we're going to head toward burnout, because whatever we believe we need more of, we're going to just work ourselves up toward that.
Yeah.
So again, it's work,
that's good,
rest, meaning. And that last one we don't talk about much, but it's identity, is that I believe that who we are matters more than what we do. And I tell leaders that as a leadership coach every single week. Who you are matters more than what you do. We are better than our best days. We are worse, or we are not worse than our worst days. And really, if you look at that, it's like, if we are looking to work to prove to us that we are good, that we are meaningful, that we are helpful people, then we are looking in a disappointing place, and it's ultimately going to turn on us. But if we just know, man, I get to work from this space of identity, that I already am creative, that I already am gifted, that I already have the opportunity to go and help these people in these ways and create meaning or economics or whatever it may be, then I get to work from this place of freedom versus this place where I literally have to go earn my own favor. I have to earn my own worth. And so if those are inverted, then it always ends poorly, because we can't control those things on the other side.
Yeah. So of those four, is there something that you see more frequently with leaders today?
Absolutely. I'm going to start with work. It's just that if we have put so much of those categories, all of those four categories of our worth into it, so our identity and meaning, and said, man, if I accomplish this thing, then I will blank. Then that's the starting spot right there. But I just think we haven't understood this interplay between work and rest, and rest. And I say that wise leaders make use of rest and momentum, rest and momentum. And if we don't, then ultimately we are either always looking to sort of slink back and underlive our lives, and we're going to be underwhelmed, or we're always having to push the envelope to feel like we belong, and we're going to live overwhelmed. And so what we say is, how do we pull the tension between underwhelm and overwhelm, of under-risking and, you know, fearing failure so much, or over-risking because we have to do so much and we have to leverage every single moment. We can't just be. Instead, we have this tension. And it's not a problem to be solved, buddy. Yeah. It's a tension to be managed.
Yeah.
And so we manage that tension of whelm. What does it look like to live and lead whelmed? And that's different based on all of our capacity.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I was just having a conversation today with a guy, and just talking about how wisdom is knowing, you know, when to do what. And it's not, I like online, especially on X, people like to say, you know, should I do X or Y? And it's like, well, there's 1,000 variables we don't know in your X and Y.
Totally.
But if we knew more of those variables, that's where wisdom comes into play. And we know, you know, based on all of those things, our identity, our passions, the thing that, things that God has put before us, then maybe I should be going this direction or that direction. Maybe this is a season, you know, to pull back.
And seasons as well. To say like, you know, well, a friend of mine just texted me, and he just had a baby. And, you know, he's in that fog. He should not add much to his life, if anything, right now. He needs to be scaling back. But then somebody else goes off, and you have, you know, an empty nest season. And I have another friend that's feeling just like a wind in his sails. Like, oh my gosh, I have so much more space to pursue some other things. So what season is it? Also, is it a planting season where really these seeds are supposed to go in the ground? And that's kind of like where I'm at right now with my book, is that I feel like these seeds can go everywhere and we'll see where they go. But 2 months ago was a season where I needed to be, you know, doing all the work in the soil to just make sure it was tilled and cultivated in that time. Very, very different seasons. I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you're saying right there.
Yeah. For me, last year was kind of a season of rest. The year before, we moved back to the States, kids all went to college, cared for my father-in-law his last 7 months of life. He lived with us. And so, and we're at the same time renovating a 3,000 square foot house that we're living in. And so there was, that was a busy season. Man. Then last year was kind of a season of rest. And then this year in January, I was like, okay, this is a season to like kind of play bigger and, you know, go, go a little bit bolder in some of the things that I feel like God has, you know, for me to do. And so, yeah, I think seasons are a big piece of that as well. If somebody is in burnout and they're thinking through those four things, what are some of the things you would say? Obviously it's going to be different, but what are some of the things you would say for someone to get healthy?
Yeah, it's going to be $10 investments that create $10,000 returns. And those $10 investments are practices, healthy habits. So like James Clear wrote a book, Atomic Habits, and it's the little things we do repeatedly that truly, truly matter. It's the compounding interest. And that's true of health and of unhealth. And so if it's like, let's use screen time. If, you know, we're scrolling for 20 minutes longer than we should be for each day.
Yeah.
At the same time, we're not able to, you know, read something life-giving or call a friend for those 20 minutes or sit in silence or do something creative that could absolutely move the needle up. So slowly the needle is moving down. In that same 20 minutes, you could be changing your life and world by filling your brain with things that truly matter or reconnecting with your friend or family or whatever.
Right.
And so those little things, we have to find a replenishment cycle. It's really, really important to say, what is something that replenishes me? And so where I like to start with this is, what are your drains and what are your fills?
Nice.
And drains are very simple. They're things that just drain us. It doesn't mean that they're bad. I can't imagine the energy of caring for your father-in-law at the end of his life. It doesn't have to be life-giving to you, but just to know you guys must have been drained at the end of that season. Is it worth being drained for? Yes. That is the stuff that truly matters. And I hope I'll do the exact same thing and focus there. But then there are the little things that are, again, one little task in here that drains us just a little bit. And that's what leaders often, this ninja or stealthy burnout that just sneaks up on people. It's often because these just little things they didn't even realize.
Yeah.
And then the other piece, if you can find your replenishment cycle, the things that just bring you joy and buoyancy and connection to other people. And you're like, man, I love this. So I actually run and operate a co-working space in addition to all my leadership coaching and development work.
Yeah.
And to me, just walking down the hallway sometimes and being with people for 5 minutes at a time and just checking in, how you doing? And grabbing a pour over coffee with them, having a conversation is just beautiful. And I love it. And it, like, my energy just goes up. So that would be an example for me, walking outside for 5 minutes to just rest in the sun. I'm bald, if you can't see this. And so it's all about all I need is 5 minutes in the Colorado sun. And I'm just kind of like, a 1 mile walk, like those kind of things, but also Sabbath to say, no matter whether you're from a faith tradition or not, there is nothing like one day a week where I do not have to produce anything.
Yeah.
And we just do pleasure stacking of just things that I love. And I go, I just get to be a dude. I just get to be a dad. I'm generally in my sweatpants. If it's chilly, I'm next to my wood stove. I got a dog in my lap. I'm laughing with my family. We're eating something good. And that day, I'm not worried about being the best leadership coach out there. I don't even care that I'm a leadership coach. I'm not worried about creating words or meaning in people's lives. I just get to soak in relationships. So those would be some places to start. And at the end of the book, one of my favorite things is I've actually borrowed practices and say, from all these practices, I don't know, maybe I share 80 or 100 of them. I say, pick up 2 to 5 of these and do them regularly and they will change your life. And so if somebody's struggling, you can borrow practices from other people and try them on. And you know, if you can't be creative and think them up, maybe you can grab them from somebody else. I started putting my phone to bed at 8 p.m. and realizing like, hey, that somebody else had a drawer for it. I have a spot on the other side of my house. It's really inconvenient. I borrowed it from somebody else. No shame, no guilt. Just pick up a couple of practices that you can regularly do and give yourself 4 to 6 weeks to really watch those practices, you know, give you some true replenishment.
Yeah. I faced burnout in 2008. I was going back to Japan to save a ministry. And about like 8-9 months in, I was getting really kind of burned out. And what I did, I immediately took Wednesday afternoons off and would go to the beach and read and started playing sports on Sunday afternoons. And that was, if I had to do over, I would like, I would have cut my hours back really quick. Well, one, now I wouldn't even get into that space because I would know it ahead of time. But I also would have done more to replenish afterwards a lot faster because I did get healthier, but it was like a 7-8 month process because I didn't attack it. So that's one thing I say to people now. If you're in burnout, like attack it quickly, you know, so that you can get healthier quicker. One of the things that I do, similar to your drains and fills, stole it from Marcus Buckingham, is like loves and hates. Like, what are the things you love that fill up your soul? What are the things that you hate that kind of drag you down? And keeping track of those things so that it's like, you know, oh, well, okay, if I need to, I can go to this list and I know these things will restore me quickly. And the other thing in those conversations is like, not like there could be something that's 90 seconds of your day that like takes like 2 hours of energy out of you. Or I don't know, you know, maybe on the other side, like 3 minutes restores like an hour or something. But I think just being aware and, you know, cognizant of those things that drain us and working to go, like you said, some of those things are, they might drain us, but they have meaning. So we do them anyway. But some of them, like, we should just edit those out of our life so that we really have the energy to do the things we're created and called to do.
And there's some incredible tools out there. The Working Genius Assessment. I'm a certified facilitator and trainer for Working Genius because it's so powerful. And there's six types. It's so simple. There's green, there's yellow, and there's red. And you're yellow in the middle, you're working competencies. And you can actually burn out faster with your working competencies because they sneak up on you. You don't see the yellows coming like you do the reds. Yeah. And so I just think the amount of tools we have today are incredible. It's going to actually be about our awareness, is stopping to pay attention and go, wow, like when I come back from the mountains fishing, even for a half day with friends, I am connected to them. I am laughing more. I'm more buoyant. I didn't even have to catch any fish. I am just soaking in the sun, actually seeing my surroundings as opposed to just zoomed in in that. And so I actually, in the book, I share that this fall I was exhausted coming in. There were factors that caught up with me, and there were 5 different areas of life, including a flood that was a major insurance battle, could have financially bankrupted us. I mean, it was brutal, and some health issues. Yeah. My wife was having some issues, my kids. It hit from all different sides. And I wasn't ready for that fall climb. Yeah. So because I was aware in that moment, I could actually take action. Yeah. And I've done a 4-day work week before. I actually quickly moved back to the 4-day work week and found myself in a much better spot. A couple weeks later, things were a little bit better, 4 weeks later, but I saw about 6 weeks or something about 6 weeks of practicing things, and you start to just kind of catch some lift. So just to encourage any listeners, if you don't see anything immediately, and you know that those things are life-giving, then it's okay. Just keep going and watch those incremental gains.
Yeah. I did a personality test called the Berkman. And in there, they talk about interests. And one of the things that, you know, it might be singing or writing or nature or whatever. And one of the things that I find over and over, even when it's like the results show this is the top, and it will restore their energy quickly, people always underestimate how quickly those, you know, the best things for them will restore their energy. And when they practice them, they're like, oh, I forgot how much I loved this, or I forgot how life-giving this was. How do you find people's personal agency to make changes? Like, I feel like sometimes in today's world, people are so busy, they're just like, well, I just have to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be nice. That's nice for you, Alan. You can get healthy because you're an author and a leadership coach. You have, you know, some autonomy over your life. Well, I work a 9-to-5, or I have this, or I have that. Mm-hmm. How do you find agency as related to burnout and getting healthy? And how do you help people have that?
Everyone has more agency than they think, period.
Yeah, that's good.
And when we start there, we tend to see what we don't have. But yeah. I'm not hearing bosses that are like, no, if you get more work done during the day, you cannot go home an hour earlier. Right. I'm not hearing, no, you cannot go outside and yeah. eat your lunch outside instead.
Yeah.
I'm just, if they're out there, and there are some toxic and evil environments trying to hold people right. down.
Right.
But I'm nowhere close to those. It's actually yeah. the people going, well, nobody would ever allow me to do that. Well, who's nobody? And have you asked them?
Right.
And what I find is actually, first of all, the greatest tool we have that's underutilized, I believe, in our culture is elimination.
Yeah.
Because we live in a culture of excess. So again, the lie of more yeah. as opposed to what is the gift or the joy of less?
Yeah.
And to just embrace that and we go, you know what? I'm going to do less of this. And so because of that, that limitation breeds innovation.
Yeah.
And well, I'm going to have to be more creative with that time. So I personally have a 2:30 cutoff time for my work at the end of the day.
Nice.
It doesn't mean that I don't work a full day. I actually do really well in the morning. So I've shifted my schedule due to our season and the age of our kids. And I love going into work early.
Yeah.
And so I work from 6 a.m. to 2:30. And a few people may think, well, that's evil. You don't see your kids in the morning. How dare you not eat breakfast with your kids? I'm like, yeah, everyone's grumpy anyway in that. But to me, the magic moment for my life is watching my kids come home from school right now, driving them around to all their 87 activities and whatnot. I'm like a full-time bus driver. I'm like a part-time leadership coach, full-time bus driver of my own kids around town. It's crazy. But there's time in the car. And I'm driving them to volleyball, and I'm taking them to Wendy's ahead of time. And it's not always like great.
Yeah,
but it's exactly the kind of dad that I want to do, and it's the good life for me.
Yeah,
and so my wife even thought, there's no way you could pull off that schedule, even though I run my own thing.
Yeah,
my own wife. And she wasn't betting against me. She just had never seen it done. And so what I've found is that everyone asks that agency question at some point. But to me, it's like, let's get creative with what we've got. And what I find is that actually we do better with less. And so we move from that efficiency mindset to that effectiveness mindset where we're actually like, wait, my thoughts are more quality. My meetings are more quality. We ask, hey guys, we've been meeting at from 2 to 4. That's not a good time for me. And my brain's pretty much done. Is there any way we could do a 1 hour meeting and we can move that instead to Tuesdays and we change how we do it? That's what I do as a leadership coach. We change how we do it. They got more results out of that meeting. They're not meeting in the afternoons and everybody ends up going home at 2 o'clock really fulfilled anyway. At the end of the day. Amazing. Yeah. And what I would say is, as a boss, if you're looking down, you don't trust your employees and they don't have the capacity to get it done, they shouldn't be paid in that role anyway. So let's just wise up and get them off the team. It's not a agency issue as much as we think. It's a capacity issue. It's a limits issue. And it's a lot of limited thinking that I could never blank.
Right. Yeah. Even, you know, I feel like I've been helping people get agency over their own lives for, you know, a decade plus. But there's still times when, like, I slip into something where I'm like, oh, I'm just stuck in this situation, you know, and you change your mindset a little bit and you realize, okay, like there's easy ways to get out of this, or we can make a change, you know. And even I tell like leaders to give, you know, the people that work with them or their team or whatever, this sheet of like love and hate, like do this for your life. What have you loved and hated in your jobs or your life? And then like the first 2 or 3 months in that role, what have you loved and hated? And when people bring that together, then you can see, okay, like this is really draining this person. And maybe it's like, well, that's your job, too bad, you know, or it could be like, hey, maybe we can shift this, or can we help you do this in a different way? Or is there some way you can do this that doesn't drain you, you know?
Yeah, it isn't just what we do, it's how we do it. So if, like, email, for example, is pretty much draining most leaders out there, if we're just honest. But what if you could give yourself the freedom to answer your email for an hour in the morning and then a half an hour at the end of the day? Or a 1 hour block, 3 days a week, you could get way more done. Then you probably wouldn't hate email as much. Spreadsheets.
Right.
If always, like for me, that's one of my drainers. Is a spreadsheet, little bits of tenacity work. I'm like, oh man. And so for me, what if I just knew I have 1 hour a week of spreadsheeting and looking at numbers and I could do all my work then, cool. I actually don't hate it that much. It's like working out for me. Like I don't like going to the gym, but to me, I like walking out of the gym afterwards.
Yeah.
And so I like walking out of, I finished numbers. I'm the kind of business owner that really looks over the numbers and is proactive looking at those kind of things. So a lot of times it's it's not just how, but it's also where and when. And so if we look at all those other questions, I think we're so obsessed with what, but if, how am I doing this? Could I do this in a more restful way?
Yeah.
Where, what environment is the best suited for me to do this? When, what's the best time of the day? And the chronotypes idea, we're all built differently in that sense. I just realized my afternoons are good for about nothing when it comes to work.
Yeah.
And they're, again, the most precious time with my family is from like 3 to 7 p.m. And so I'm just like, well, even if I have to make less money, I'm actually going to go do that. And I made that, you know, kind of rip the Band-Aid decision off.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think that, you know, realizing those things, making, you know, lining up our lives. And then, of course, we're always tweaking. And someone just asked me about a decision today. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who it was. And I was like, well, just start. Like, practice that for 2 weeks. You can always go back, you know, like, and even, and like, I find in getting other people to do things too, if you, instead of saying, hey, we're going to make this big change, we got to do this, this, if you just say, hey, could we try this for 2 weeks and see how it goes? Like if someone were to say that to a boss or an employee or whatever, it's like, well, if you're just trying something, go ahead and try it. And maybe it works better. Maybe it doesn't. But if you say we're changing this, people, like, you know, they get nervous and they're like, I don't know about this, but those little things definitely make a big difference, you know, in our lives. Anything that I didn't know to ask you about, just the whole sustainability journey for leaders, that you would, you know, your favorite thing to share or story or something that I just didn't know to ask you about in this podcast?
Something that deeply resonates with every leader that I talk with and coach and converse with around coffee or coaching conversations or fire pits is that the currency of leadership is energy, not time.
Mm.
And we've been talking about it and around it, buddy, but let's just name that, that it's energy, not time. That five minutes of looking our employee in the eye and having a meaningful conversation with them could produce more trust than the last 5 months.
Yeah.
Could have working side by side.
Totally.
An hour of being present with our family, as opposed to 10 hours of scrolling or just watching TV next to, could actually bring better connection. And I think we've been so obsessed with time that we have undervalued and underutilized energy to be able to go where we're going. And so that's been something huge that I dig at a lot. And I just actually, not only in the book, but in coaching, is really important to go not only the drains and the fills, but where should you be investing your best energy? And, you know, the 80-20 rule, it's beautiful. Yeah. And I feel like I'm really getting there and I'm almost there. And I've hired around some of those drains for me. But when you start to put 80% of your energy toward that 20% thing that really moves the needle for you, then that flywheel begins to spin. And that's, you may not be able to get there. You certainly can't get there overnight, but moving there slowly creates this just incredible momentum of moving from addition to multiplication.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm curious, what is, just 20 seconds, what is your co-working space all about? What's the focus there?
Yes. Where it came from is that I've been seeing the burnout epidemic and, obviously I write and speak about that, you know, a lot. But over here, I was also watching the loneliness epidemic and how working from home is not actually working very well for most people.
Yeah.
You have to be very healthy, very self-aware, very intuitive, and very intentional to work from home and not see it kind of tank your creativity in many ways.
Yeah.
And so just watching that and the disruption of what is the future of work, a friend and I have partnered together to create a hub space somewhere in between event space and then a marketplace and co-working. And what if we could actually come together for gatherings? And so we do a lot of crowdsourcing different ideas and processes. Today is actually book launch of my book, but we found a few months ago that there were two people with manuscripts done, didn't know how to publish their books. We actually went on a book writing journey together and a publishing journey together. And those guys today are also launching their books. So we have a triple book launch today coming from that. And we're watching people work together. We're watching people source their ideas. and take them through groups together and do fake pitches and develop their companies and organizations together. And it's been pretty amazing to watch. So I could tell stories all day long. I better not.
What's the domain for your space?
Yeah, so it's just called Gather. So Gather COS is what we call ourselves. And so Colorado Springs. We also have a location in Denver. And we're pretty excited about that. The name will actually be shifting here soon because we want to make space for a national movement that we believe that these hub or gathering spaces need to exist, especially in mid-size cities across the country. And largely, I think Kingdom Leaders will be the fuel of abundance mindset and connection in those spaces.
That's really cool. So is the main place for people to find you stayforth.com, or is there somewhere else you'd like to send them?
Yep. Easy. Stayforth.com. So don't go forth, stayforth.com.
Yeah.
And the idea is the issues travel with us quite well, but so will the lessons. And so you don't have to leave or hop over the ocean or hop over state lines or hop over to your next job to be able to learn the lessons that you can learn right now. And so that's truly my heart for leaders, is stay forth right where you're at, not just geographically, but ultimately to learn and grow right where you're at in this moment and in this season.
All right. And tell us about the name of your book and where people can best go to pick that up.
So it's called Anti-Burnout, A Lighter Way to Live and Lead in a Heavy World. And so I'm really juxtaposing the heaviness right now in our world and in our culture and just the wars that we think through, political division that we think through, and just the weight that leaders carry, and say, what is a lighter way for us to be able to do this? And so anti-burnout, this constant resistance or path against burnout, going upstream from that to live and lead in this lighter way. And so, yep, anti-burnout, and you can find it on Amazon and Audible, all the versions.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Alan. It was great having you on the podcast. We definitely have a lot of ways of thinking in common. And I think you had the most like tweetable quotes per minute of a podcast that I've ever done. So I'll have a lot of
Is that fun. We need a factor there. Is there a percentage that you could put to that tweetable quotes per minute on that?
Probably.
Wow, I'm honored.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was at least, you know, like 1.7 tweetable quotes per minute of podcast. Wow. So, yeah.
The ratio is incredible. Hey, let me tell on myself behind that. I know we're trying to close out. The reason that I like tweetable quotes is not only because they travel well to other people. The real reason is because I can't remember stuff very well. So if I can't remember it very well, then I know nobody else can. So I'm always trying to put things in these simple, carryable things. Because again, overwhelmed leaders, busy leaders, leaders whose lives are full, we cannot throw much complexity at them. So honestly, if I want to remember it, I got to make it tweetable.
Yeah. Well, great having you on the podcast, Alan. If you're ever back in Virginia, love to go for a hike with you. And if I'm ever out in the Springs, definitely want to check out your co-working space. So best of luck on your book launch and with these co-working spaces going forward.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch. Thanks for having me. Keep up the great work.
BAM School, facilitating a global self-funding disciple-making movement through business. Thanks for tuning in to the BAM School podcast. Find show notes, free courses, resources, and more at 4BAM.com.